face in my league. Got a blockbuster on my way and a pickup up my sleeve. They call my team insane, say I'm the one to beat. So you better bring your A game and start playing, cause every single week another win for me.
Yo, commissioner, you can just pay me now. City win first place, then take a bow. Finish on top, I'ma set the standard. Don't believe me, you could check the standings. When I draft, I make smart selections. Got more sleepers than a narcoleptic. Meet your match, kid, my lineup's nasty. It's far-fetched.
Welcome in to the Friends with Fantasy Benefits NFL Draft Recap. Joining me tonight, Colin Weatherwax and Ray Kuhn. How we doing, guys?
Good, man. How are you?
Good, good. Thanks for being on. Colin, how are you?
Doing great, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so tonight we're going to dive in to the NFL draft and take a look at mostly who is going to have a possible fantasy impact in the 2018-19 NFL season. The biggest thing for me in a rookie draft is where are these guys landing? Is there a path to playing time? It doesn't matter how talented they are if they can't get on the field. Another thing I always try to hedge against is chasing the prior year's breakout. So, I think it was 2014 was the wide receiver class year with OBJ so many great receivers coming in as rookies and being fantasy relevant immediately. The next year everybody jumped on that bandwagon and thought, I'm going to get one of these guys and they're going to be a difference maker for me. And it just didn't happen, didn't pan out. You were chasing last year's breakout. So this year, the spot I think you have to be careful with is running back. Everybody is going to be looking, for a guy who's going to come in and make a day one impact. And while that's possible, I think you do need to be careful, especially chasing a guy in the mold of an Alvin Kamara. That's one of the most thrown around comparisons so far this year is, who's this year's Kamara? There's not going to be another Alvin Kamara this year, in my opinion. There could be a good running back, but a guy who – didn't have the college stats, a ton of hype and is going to turn into a top 10 player. That's just so rare. You guys agree with that?
Yeah. And I think to start off the season, the hot name was Kareem Hunt and, Alvin Kamara was just so far down the board just because he played in New Orleans for most of us fantasy drafters. So everyone was thinking about taking Hunt. But if you remember back in draft season, he was falling because, Spencer Ware still had that job. So it was like you were saying, there was a worse path to playing time for Kareem Hunt starting off the season. And then, of course, if you drafted him late and then Spencer Ware got hurt for the year, so it worked out. But I think that, like you said, Mike, I agree completely that people will be chasing that production later on in, with the guys that were drafted this year, they'll be chasing someone that like Kareem Hunt where they're going in and they'll just overtake that veteran for whatever reason and just start off hot and just keep it going for the rest of the fantasy season.
Yeah. And there was five or six marquee running backs as rookies last season. And I was willing to give anyone this bet. I'll take the under on half of those guys being the leading rusher on their team. It was hit and miss. Kareem Hunt got a big boost there, but McCaffrey, Mixon, Samaje Perine, people were, just because it's, there's an unknown factor with these running backs coming in. They wanted to treat them like starting running backs. They said, they're not there yet. They've got guys they've got to beat out for the job. And, veterans usually aren't going to lose the job in training camp. It's going to have to happen during the season. So that's something to keep in mind when drafting these guys. Running back obviously is the easiest impact spot. You could get into the game, get the ball in your hands as a running back. Wide receiver can be tough. You've got to learn a playbook. It's more complicated than running back. Tight ends have a really hard time with it as first-year players. There's very, very few first-year difference-making tight ends. even the best ones in the game didn't have very good rookie years. And then obviously quarterback is, you know, a mixed bag. These days you can come in and be a difference making quarterback as a rookie with the right skill set. You know, we've seen that in the last few years. There's definitely guys who've been able to make the leap. You know, last year, Deshaun Watson is probably the best example of a guy who had great pure athleticism. And there was just some questions about whether he could transition to the NFL game. And, you know, for that brief moment before his knee injury, he answered them all in the affirmative. So I think that's a good spot to jump into quarterback. We'll start there. Go through the names briefly. I don't think there's really any huge difference makers in this quarterback class as far as 2018-19 season is concerned. Obviously, you had Baker Mayfield going first overall to the Browns. He was the guy I thought would have the best shot to make a year one impact. But you know, he's got to compete with Tyrod Taylor there. So, you know, that job's probably not his, at least a portion of the season, maybe even longer. You know, they might just let him learn for a year and leave Tyrod out there. You know, we were talking about it a little bit before we came on, Colin. You're kind of on the same page there, right?
Yeah, I'm on the same page, but I can see a path to playing time coming a little bit sooner than we all expect him to be ready, just because I know Cleveland fans, they're clamoring to have their next savior. Mm-hmm. And if Tyrod Taylor comes out and throws an interception the first drive of the year, or if they start off 0-4 and he's not looking very good, then, you know, the fans, the media, us fantasy players will be clamoring for them just to give Baker a shot. And I think more the peer pressure, more the Hugh Jackson needing to, you know, win this year to kind of keep his job might pressure them into playing Baker before he's actually ready.
Right. Yeah, I mean, Hugh Jackson is definitely on the hot seat. He probably should have got fired last year, but managed to force the GM Sasha out there. So he's kind of out of excuses. He's got plenty of talent. They've improved on both sides of the ball. You know, like myself last year when I was projecting them, I think I had them at like 6 wins. And, you know, that was wrong by 6. but you know, that could get Tyrod the hook earlier than you might expect.
Yeah, I mean, I can kind of see that going both ways. The thing is, now they got Carlos Hyde, so I mean, obviously Hyde isn't great from fantasy perspective, but at least he's somebody with Duke Johnson to kind of pound the rock a little bit. They picked up Landry, they have Josh Gordon, they have Corey Coleman, so they have a little better of a supporting cast than they've had in years past. I mean, also the thing with Taylor is that he does run a lot, so it's possible he gets hurt. That could open up a spot for Mayfield, but yeah, I definitely agree with what you guys are saying that first time he throws 2 or 3 picks, they're going to try to win. You're going to see Mayfield in there. And I think Mayfield can be one of those situations where it's almost like fantasy fool's gold, where if he comes in the second half of a game, throws 2 or 3 touchdown passes, Cleveland maybe gets an elusive victory, then everyone's going to go nuts on the waiver wire or buy all into Mayfield. And it's going to be kind of an up and down roller coaster ride that I'm not sure, other than in a best ball format as like my third or fourth quarterback, I'm not sure is something I want to be a part of.
Right. Yeah, definitely. You know, that's a nice spot, like you said, in a best ball where you're with your last or second to last pick, you feel like you need one more quarterback to have a little bit of a end of season safety net. He's a guy you could consider there for sure.
Yeah, because he might have like 1 or 2 really good weeks, but in a seasonal league, I don't want, you know, where I'm picking my lineup every week, I don't want to bet on which weeks those are.
Right. All right, then the next guy taken off the board, Sam Darnold to the Jets. I wasn't the biggest Darnold fan. The last time we saw a USC quarterback who was, you know, hyped pretty heavily earlier in his college career and then kind of came out flat in his last season prior to making the jump was Matt Barkley. And I'm not even sure Barkley's in the NFL right now. I know he was backing up in Chicago for a little bit and then San Fran. He's bounced around. So needless to say, he was not an impact NFL quarterback. So, you know, that worries me a little bit with Darnold. He's also blocked by Josh McCown there, who should be back healthy, I would think, and is going to at least start the year as the quarterback of the Jets. Couple more guys in that same mold, in the next part of the draft here. Josh Allen going to the Bills. He's probably behind A.J. McCarron. They brought McCarron in as a free agent. That's not the highest hurdle to clear, but McCarron's getting paid, so he's going to have to really come out and fall flat. Yeah, I could see it happening, similar to the situation with the Bears last season. You guys agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, yeah, obviously I was going to bring up the Bears situation, but I mean, McCarron, they only signed him to a 2-year, $10 million contract. McNown's on a 1-year mm-hmm. deal, and I think the next one, obviously, to bring up is Josh Rosen. Sam Bradford's on a 1-year deal in Arizona. So to me, they're not heavily invested in any of these guys. Bradford and McCown have injury issues in the past, and McCarron's never done it as a starter for a full season, so we don't really know yes or no what he can do over 16 games. As far as supporting casts, I mean, none of them are – I mean, I think the Cardinals have the best supporting cast by far for a rookie quarterback to lean on with David Johnson and obviously Larry Fitzgerald. The Jets probably have the worst situation for a quarterback to go into, where you have Robbie Anderson, Terrell Pryor, and, you know, Jermaine Kearse. I mean, that's just going to be nightmarish. And Darnold's coming from USC, so he might have a downgrade in talent there. So, right. I mean – whether or not he's a great quarterback or the USC curse or whatever you think, it's really going to come down to supporting cast for me. And I don't think any of these three are going to be on my draft sheet.
No, yeah, not for 2018. Allen's an interesting fit with the Bills. That's not like a high accuracy offense. At least you wouldn't expect it to be. And that's kind of his biggest mark against, you know, he's got the arm, but he's erratic at times. So I thought that was actually a good fit for both Allen and the team that drafted him as the Bills. Same thing with Rosen. I think that's a good fit out in Arizona for him. I kind of feel like all these guys kind of went to the right place. It was kind of interesting. That doesn't always happen. You see teams go after the quarterback that they think is the best, not necessarily the best fit.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that.
Yeah, I agree as well. And, you know, watching the draft, I was watching, you know, where those quarterbacks were going, of course. So Darnold, I thought was going to go number one. I thought it was a smokescreen that Baker was going to get picked. But him winding up in New York, I agree with Ray that he probably just needs to take a redshirt year and let them develop some talent around him. So that way, you know, they can give him the best chance to succeed. And then moving on to the Allen and Rosen picks, you know, I completely agree with what you're saying, Mike. You know, if Rosen was drafted by the Bills, you know, a California kid playing in, you know, a snowstorm every other week, I just didn't see that playing out very well. So I do think the fits are very nice for Allen and Rosen. Like you said, Josh Allen doesn't have a very good completion percentage. Well, neither did Tyrod Taylor. You know, they have Kelvin Benjamin and LeSean McCoy. So they have some talent around him. And then Josh Rosen gets to learn from, you know, a former number one overall pick, Sam Bradford, career backup in Mike Glennon. And then he gets to watch Larry Fitzgerald work every day. So, you know, I think, you know, given the time and development that all four of these quarterbacks could become fantasy relevant as soon as next year.
Yeah, I got to give some props to Pat Thorman on Twitter. He probably had the funniest tweet of the draft was Josh Allen deleted less than 60% of his offensive tweets.
Yeah, got to be consistent on the field and off. Right.
But then, yeah, the last quarterback to talk about is Lamar Jackson. The Ravens did him the favor of having to sleep overnight in the green room waiting to get drafted. took him with the last pick, traded up with the Eagles to snag him before people could think about it overnight and realize that this guy was probably too good of an athlete to not take a chance on. There's a chance he's fantasy relevant. You know, Joe Flacco's in the last year of his deal. He's taken a lot of wear and tear over the years, especially last year. Their offensive line just wasn't where it was in prior years. They lost some veterans, and you know, he got beat up a little bit. He came into the year with I think it was a shoulder injury that he never really seemed to get over.
Yeah, back.
Back was at the back. Yeah, so you know that really limited him throughout the year. If that kind of thing happens again, I think you see Lamar Jackson earlier than some people expect.
He could be an interesting one because, I mean, again, like you said, Flacco's also in the last year of his contract. And even when healthy, mm-hmm. it's not like he's a great fantasy quarterback either. I know he's won some games for Baltimore, and that doesn't necessarily translate to fantasy. But still, he hasn't been great. His performance has been kind of down the last few years. And Jackson doesn't necessarily need to be a great passer to have fantasy value because he could pick up 5-6 points a game just from running and not even getting into the end zone. So I think that puts him on your radar.
Yeah, he's definitely got the wheels. They've obviously never had a quarterback that can really run with Flacco being there for so long. So I don't know if that would be a staple of their offense. But in the NFL, most OCs have come around to understanding that, you know, that's the way of the NFL. If you have that skill set, you have to embrace it at least partially. So I would expect him, especially as a rookie, if he got in there to be given at least the leash to run if he feels like, you know, he needs to bolt and possibly even, you know, a few runs a game designed. So he's another.
Yeah, that's definitely a possibility, Mike. And with Lamar Jackson, you know, we were talking about best ball drafts. He's probably the one quarterback in the first round that was drafted this year that I'm willing to take a flyer on, you know, early in the season without, you know, any research yet. But, you know, just like Ray was saying, he has the ability to get you those 50, 60 yards, you know, a couple games out of the year, maybe even more if Flacco continues to have his back issues. But you know, I think people might be fading Joe Flacco coming into the season. He's actually someone that I think his value has increased because I see the Ravens kind of going all in with Joe Flacco this year. Mm-hmm. His best seasons have come whenever his tight ends have been, you know, his main targets. And they went out and drafted two guys in the first three rounds. They went out and got, you know, an offensive tackle that had slipped a little bit late that's very talented. Mm-hmm. So they're trying to protect him and give him the options to succeed possibly in his last year with the team. So he's someone that I might be actually buying as a QB number two coming into the season.
Yeah, they definitely pushed their chips into the middle, knowing that this is probably Flacco's last year. There's no way I think they resign him unless he's willing to take a pretty steep discount. But yeah, I mean, you know, they're never going to, it's going to take a major injury for Lamar Jackson to probably see the field. I can't see them pulling the plug on a healthy Flacco at all.
I mean, it depends how bad he is. But I mean, like Colin was saying, I think he does have some value with some of the additions they made this year. I could see that.
All right. So let's jump into the running backs. You know, this is the bulk of fantasy relevance for rookies. And it was one of the best running back classes in a long time. There's plenty of talent to go around. You know, a lot of controversy at the top there, whether the Giants made a mistake taking Saquon Barkley at number two. Not that Barkley wasn't the best running back in the class. It was, you know, the argument was that's, you know, the value of a running back, even the best running back, is nowhere near the value of a good cornerback, a good offensive tackle, a pass rusher, that kind of thing. You guys have any feeling on Barkley going it too?
I like it. I think the Giants kind of had to do that because, I mean, there's questions with all the quarterbacks. I mean, obviously we just talked about it. We're not overly enthused about any of them for this year. And I think long-term it might be the same story. And I mean, they still have Eli Manning going into last year. The Giants were thought to be Super Bowl contenders, win the division, all that jazz. Obviously, it didn't happen. Eli did not play great, but there's a lot of other things that went wrong around him. And I think you're pushing your chips in with Eli for this year. You have Barkley, who is not necessarily a traditional running back. I mean, we've seen Jacksonville hit it with Fournette and Dallas hit it with Ezekiel Elliott, taking them early in the first round. And to me, Barkley's a more dynamic player than either of those two because of his pass-catching ability as well. And whether it's Eli, whether it's David Webb next year, whether it's a quarterback that they took from Richmond, Barkley is going to make any of them better. So to me, Barkley was the one I think can't miss prospect in this draft, and I think he'll probably be off the board first, second round in just about every fantasy draft this year.
Yeah, I mean, there's a little bit of a hurdle with them bringing in what was his name? Jonathan Stewart. He's got to beat Jonathan Stewart out, which is not difficult at all. But I could see them maybe coming into the season with a bigger split than they're going to be at the end of the season. And Stewart is definitely, at his age and his injury history, not a guy you can count on to be there all 16 games.
But I mean, I like Stewart being there because I think it takes some of the pressure off of Barkley also, and it'll help to ease his workload in the beginning.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, he might lose a short yardage touchdown or two early in the season, but I think that's about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think with Barkley, Jonathan Stewart coming in, it just fully solidifies, I know you compared Ray, I know you compared Barkley to Zeke, and then, the other running back that was taken highly in the draft, how they're just kind of the traditional running back, but Barkley seems to me to almost fit the mold completely of Christian McCaffrey, but he has better vision as a runner, better, running back tendencies with the added effect of Christian McCaffrey's receiving ability. So, I agree with you, Ray, that, the Giants probably didn't have those top four quarterbacks highly on their board. They probably had Barkley as their number one player, and they're pushing their chips in for this year. I mean, look at their roster. I mean, especially on their offensive side, they have Eli Manning, who's done it in the past, who's produced Super Bowls for them over the Patriots of all teams. And then, Odell Beckham, Ingram at the tight end. They have a couple receivers and maybe even, Dez after we're done with this podcast, you might sign there. Mm-hmm. So, their offense is going to be deadly. And the one thing that Eli hasn't had in the past is a running back that can take the load off of him. So, whenever he did, it was with Tiki Barber, and I think they won the Super Bowl. So that just shows, giving him an option at the running back position, better than, a bench piece on most people's rosters, he could excel and they could make a Super Bowl run.
Yeah. Interesting, with a lot of people said, well, why didn't you trade back? Why didn't you get something if you were not going to take a quarterback? I don't think any of these teams in the top five really had much leverage because there were four quarterbacks and none of them were a clear cut number one. People had their preferences, but if you're the Giants and you're calling Arizona saying, do you want to get your guy at two here? They probably made him an offer, but not one commensurate with what the number two pick is worth. So I think at the end of the day, they had to say, all right, let's just get our guy.
Yeah, I mean, I think that goes back to the point you made at the beginning of the show that Rosen was probably their guy, and they figured that the Jets weren't going to take him, and that if Buffalo wasn't going to take him, that they'd be able to sit back and get Rosen where they did. And I think Denver not taking the quarterback also hurt the trade value of the Giants pick at two. And the other thing, the Giants' second-round pick, when they took Will Hernandez, the guard, I think that's going to be a huge help for both Barkley and Eli, and also the signing of Nate Solder from the Patriots. So I think those are two more interesting factors there.
Yeah, that is huge because I said all season long that the Giants made such a huge, huge mistake by letting Andrew Whitworth go to the Rams and not paying up for him and getting a real left tackle. He changed that Rams offensive line entirely, stabilized it, and you saw what happened with their running game. Solder could have
that. Yeah, and Ray, like you said, and I agree about, Will Hernandez. He's a beast. He's going to be a great run blocker, and that's a great pick for the Giants. And Ray, like you said, I think the number five pick with Denver, I think that shocked, you know, most of the guys that were picking after them. They're like, oh my gosh, they actually went best player available. They didn't take one of these quarterbacks. So, you know, being a Raiders fan, I hated it. I hated seeing them walk up to the commissioner and give him that card that said Chubb. I was throwing stuff. You might have to bleep out some stuff if we get too in depth on Chubb. So, you know, but I think that did a domino effect for Josh Rosen being picked at number 10 and Allen at number 7.
Yeah, and then the next guy who people expected to go was Darius Geis, but he slipped till the end of the second. There was some stuff trickling out, you know, between day one and day two that he had some kind of a shouting match or confrontation with some of the Eagles personnel. I heard Deuce, I heard Roseman. I haven't really gotten a firm confirmation on what happened, but needless to say, there seemed like there was an attitude issue and people kind of just said, you know what, there's other guys available and we'll go that route. But he's landed on the Redskins, and I think that's a great spot. He's obviously a talented player, tremendous athlete. The Redskins have a really solid offensive line. The pieces are right for him to be an impact player year one. He does have to beat out some people. You got Samaje Perine, Chris Thompson, and Rob Kelly. You know, Chris Thompson's not a feature back, plus he's coming off of a pretty bad injury. Rob Kelly is, you know, a 2.5 yards per carry machine. And Samaje Perine, you know, he had flashes, but I don't think he's somebody that'll hold back a player of Geis's ability. So he's somebody I'm pretty excited in, especially in a best ball where you can get him and you don't have to play the guessing game of, you know, when does he fully take over.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, with Rob Kelly, you know, I agree that, you know, he's only a 2 yard per carry guy. I think it's a testament of, ball security because Samaje Perine had all the talent in the world, but he just couldn't hold on to the ball. And so I think them picking Geis was a testament to him falling and probably the best player on their board, but also a testament of them not believing in Samaje Perine. So I think he might have a hard time making the roster coming up this year. But for Geis, you know, what a better place for him to land with all the reports coming out on the Philadelphia Eagles. He gets to play him twice a year. So, to kind of shut him up and show them, you know, look, y'all should have picked me. And, you know, it was a mistake for six other running backs to go ahead of me. So I agree. You know, he's probably someone that I'll be drafting somewhat early if I'm going to do a no RB strategy, kind of like I did going into last year.
It's going to be interesting that first game against the Skins when they're in Philly. He's going to hear it when he touches the ball for the first time. That's for sure.
Yeah, and they'll just say, "Look, we won the Super Bowl." That's what the Philadelphia Eagles will do.
I think he definitely has value. I mean, in college, he averaged 6.5 yards a carry, which is double what Perine and Kelly can do on a good day. And I'm not necessarily concerned about Thompson because it's different skill sets. So, yes, I think that'll work there.
Yeah, sure. Then the next guy I want to talk about was kind of a surprise first rounder, Rashad Penny going to the Seahawks at 27th overall. Most people, you know, they liked Penny coming into the draft. He's got great speed. He produced at San Diego State, but, you know, obviously there's some competition questions, that he faced. But the Seahawks said, you know what, we like him. We don't think he's going to be there when we pick again. Let's grab him.
I mean, yeah, obviously they wanted their guy. They got their guy. For me, I'm not sure I'm going to necessarily own Penny in any league, in any seasonal leagues this year, or really any leagues at all, just for the fact that he wasn't thought to be a first round running back. He ended up going in the first round. And I think because of that, people are going to overrate him. I mean, I understand that he's going into the season with a clear path to playing time that some of the other running backs that were drafted don't have. But I think his ADP is just going to get too inflated, where I'm not going to want to take the risk on a San Diego State running back.
Yeah, I mean, there's still some cobwebs to clear. They've got four running backs already on the roster who saw time last season. You know, Chris Carson had shown some promise before going down with a pretty bad ankle injury. There's always CJ Procise and and his about 10 minutes of healthy time on the football field. Mike Davis was kind of a bit of a bruiser and was effective in spots, but you know, who knows with him. And then JD McKissic was, you know, is a pass catching back exclusively. So I think you're right there, Ray. It's, you know, there, it's you don't want to overreach for Penny, even though, you know, the thing I've heard the most with him is you don't take a guy in the first round if you're not going to play him. Well, I'm sure they're going to play him, but is he going to get 20 touches a game? You know, does he get 10 touches and three passes? And, you know, is that going to be enough to feed a running back that's going to be fantasy worthy?
My concern is the passing game.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, they have a couple guys, like you said, Mike, you know, that can take over the passing role. And you didn't even mention Thomas Rawls being on the roster as well. So not only do they have 18 running backs that need touches, they don't have an offensive line that can support a running back getting 100 yards rushing. I mean, their leading rusher last year, I think, had 240 yards on the season. So, you know, I'm with Ray that I'm probably not going to own him in any leagues next year just because of the uncertainty in Seattle for a running back. Ever since they got rid of Lynch, they've kind of changed philosophies and made it Russell Wilson's team. We're going to live and die by his legs and arm. And so, you know, with the logjam at running back, with the uncertainty at the offensive line, I mean, they took one offensive lineman in this draft, and everyone knew that that was one of the biggest weaknesses for the Seahawks last year. So, yeah, he's someone that I'm definitely fading.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. You know, we've got Brian Schottenheimer getting brought in there as offensive coordinator. So you really don't know what that offense is going to look like. Like you said, the offensive line talent-wise is definitely a major question mark. They've got a new OL coach as well. So maybe he can get that group together. You know, I don't think they always had the best approach with offensive line in the past. So it'll be something to keep an eye towards. But yeah, it's not a clear cut, win with Penny just because he's a first rounder.
Yeah. I was just going to add, I totally agree with Colin about Wilson being the leading rusher. So I think that's another mark against him.
Yep.
Yeah. And then moving on to the next guy, I know that's probably the same opinion, you know, being with the Patriots, Sony Michael, it's the Patriots, you know, no matter who they have, we're never going to feel comfortable owning them. I mean, I could be on an island, but I think we're all pretty much in agreement.
I'll just cut and paste last year's sound about about the Patriots backfield. You know, it's whoever the cheapest running back in drafts for the Patriots is, that's the guy to go get. You know, Mike Gillisley was obviously the guy coming in last year that was going to score double digit touchdowns, no problem. In the blunt role. I think this year you're going to see people talking about Michelle in the the Deion Lewis role
and then right. Jeremy Hill in the LeGarrette Blount role, but we know it's probably going to be flip-flopped or someone off the practice squad is going to come in and take both their spots.
Yeah. I'm not so even going to try. That's
the only thing you need to know about the Patriots backfield is take the cheapest one you can find and stash him, or if it's a best ball, even better, like you said, Ray.
I mean, Michael is a talented player, but I don't want to figure out what week to start him.
Yeah, it was the worst possible landing spot for him. For us. I mean, for us as fantasy owners. I mean, for him, it's great. He might win a Super Bowl this year, but, you know, for a fantasy owner, we're all in agreement that, you know, he's probably not someone that you should be targeting.
And that's, you know, the same thing. People said, oh, you know, Patriots didn't take him first round, not to play him. They're going to play him, but you're just not going to know when. So, next couple of guys to go, you got Ronald Jones going to the Buccaneers. That one's pretty interesting. Doug Martin is no longer on the Bucs. They cleared his contract out. So, you know, he's got to win the job. But that offense, it was supposed to be explosive last year. Obviously disappointed. But Charles Sims, Peyton Barber, Jaquizz Rodgers aren't marquee running back names. You know, the more I saw of Rojo film-wise as the year went on, the more I liked him. He's not an explosive player from any single standpoint, but just a good pure runner, in my opinion. So he's a guy that might not get as much attention as some of these bigger names that, that could be of relevance as the season goes on.
Yeah, and this goes right back to what you were saying at the beginning of the podcast, Mike, that it's more about situation than it is about their talent. And coming in to the season for the Buccaneers, they have Charles Sims, you know, basically in his role as a third down back, and then they don't really have – they have a lot of uncertainty as their first and second down back. So I think Ronald Jones might turn out to be, you know, right up there with Saquon Barkley as the top in this class as far as rookies go this
Completely
year.
Agree. I think he's my – behind Barkley, he's my number two. Yeah.
And then you got Kerryon Johnson going to the Lions. This isn't – I was really interested at who the Lions were going to take at running back because, you know, their backfield is trash. Whoever they drafted was immediately, you know, fantasy relevant. Johnson's got his detractors and his supporters for sure. You know, he's not an amazing athlete, but I think he's a good runner and they went out of their way to draft him. So, He's definitely a guy I want to keep tabs on in a draft.
Yeah, I mean, he scored 18 touchdowns last year. So, I mean, he has a knack for getting in the end zone. He averaged 4.8 yards a carry in college. So I think there's definitely something there. And like you said, the opportunity is probably one of the bigger things. And he definitely has it in Detroit.
Yeah, and any kind of success is going to consolidate that running back role. So, you know, not difficult to do.
Yeah, and then with their roster,
go ahead.
Sorry, Mike. With their roster, you know, they have the guy that they need in the third down role with Riddick, and then they have a lot of uncertainty in their first couple down roles. So one of the things non fantasy that I thought was pretty comical in this draft was a lot of Detroit Lion, New England Patriot draft pick trades. Yeah. I thought that was a little interesting, a little bit of collusion going on, maybe, but kind of to spin it back towards Johnson, I see him probably being right there with Ronald Jones as long as he performs. Like Ray said, the person that performs first or the most is going to get the most carries. And, you know, they haven't had a 100-yard rusher since Reggie Bush. So, you know, anybody with a pulse can get a chance as long as they can get 10 yards on, you know, one carry, they might solidify themselves as the starting running back for the Detroit Lions.
Then you got Nick Chubb going to the Browns. You know, he's blocked in that backfield. That situation I see very similar to Joe Mixon last year where people said, oh, you know, he's obviously the best back. Well, you didn't see him take over until towards the end of the season. And even when he did, you know, the team was kind of blah and he didn't really produce. So, you know, Chubb has to beat out a couple of backs in that backfield that have established roles. And the biggest similarity to me is that, you know, with a running back, you got to have one of these two roles. You either have to be getting goal line carries or getting passes thrown your way. And Mixon wasn't going to get either of those last year. Same thing with Chubb. You know, Duke Johnson's their passing back. And Carlos Hyde is probably going to see the lion's share of goal line work unless he gets injured. So Chubb for me is kind of a non-starter.
I mean, I'm going to keep my eyes on him just because he's a talented player. But I mean, the other thing is that if Cleveland's trailing a lot, it's going to be Duke Johnson getting the majority of the work in that backfield.
Yep. Yeah, that killed Isaiah Crowell's value last year for sure.
Yeah, for me, Duke Johnson's still the guy to own in this backfield. I think Chubb would gain some momentum if Carlos Hyde struggles or if he gets injured, which he has in the past. But I'm with you guys. You know, Nick Chubb probably doesn't have a solidified role. He's more of an injury replacement guy. And while he's talented, I loved what he did at Georgia. I don't see him cracking, you know, the Browns starting running back rotation unless there's an injury.
Where I want to get Chubb, I want to be the guy who picks him up when whoever drafts him gets sick of him at the end of their bench, you know, week two or week three, when they got to make a cut decision, kicks him to the curb, grab him the next week and see if you can stash him for a little bit. And a couple other notable backs, just to mention briefly, Royce Freeman from Oregon is going to the Broncos. Obviously, there's some openings there. The Broncos actually have a couple of pretty good backs already on that team, but neither guy has grabbed a hold of the role. Devontae Booker, you know, 2 years ago was supposed to be the guy, but hasn't taken over. D'Angelo Henderson is not a complete back, but he's kind of a freak athlete. In the preseason last year, he really showed some stuff. So if he can round his game out, he's a guy that might win that role. But yeah, there's potential there. You've got Ito Smith going to the Falcons, which is kind of notable because they took him a good bit earlier in the fourth round. Most people kind of had him as a fifth or sixth round value. He's an Alabama kid, and Steve Sarkisian, the Falcons offensive coordinator, coached at Alabama for a little bit there. So, you know, he might have been familiar with Smith from his college recruiting days and said, hey, let's get up and get this guy.
Yeah, I think for me, I'm going to refrain from talking about the Denver Broncos. I just have that in my blood. I don't want to speak about them. No, but I agree. You know, Devontae Booker, they have a lot of high hopes for him. Royce Freeman can find some role in this offense as long as he performs. He's got breakaway speed. He could find himself in that third down role as long as D'Angelo Henderson doesn't improve. So I like their trio of young running backs. I think it might be a little bit hard to decide who to draft. You know, it might be someone that, you know, you just pick up, you know, one or two of them in a best ball league, like we've said. But, you know, one of the guys that I like is Nyheim Hines from NC State. I love where he landed up. I love where he landed in Indianapolis, only because I love what they did the rest of the draft. You know, they knew they needed to solidify that line to keep Andrew Luck healthy. And if that line is improved, and if Andrew Luck makes it the whole season, then this is a guy along with I can't remember the other guy they have on their roster already, Marlon Mack. Yeah, if they have a two-headed monster there, you know, that could be something to keep an eye on.
You know, I definitely agree with that. I think he definitely – and then they drafted Quentin Nelson. I think he's definitely in a good spot with Indianapolis. And Freeman might be one of those guys that emerges as a Kamara, somebody that going into the year doesn't exactly have the playing time, was a third, fourth round pick. You can take one of your last picks, stash him at the end of your roster, take him instead of a kicker, and just see what happens. Yeah.
You heard it here first. Kamara or Freeman is
yes,
Kamara.
Yes, that's exactly Ray what I meant. But I mean, all those guys, it's like, you know, Booker, all those, they've had their chances. Sample size is still somewhat, they're still young, but they've had their chances and they haven't done anything. That it could be a situation where Freeman has a good preseason game or just takes it early. He might just never let up. So. You know, so I mean, I'd rather take a shot on him than draft somebody like Chubb or Sony Michael, somebody like that.
Yeah, and then with the rest of the backs, you just kind of have to keep your ear to the ground as the preseason goes on. You know, see if anybody is leapfrogging guys getting into, you know, the primary backup role. So that's about all the backs I want to talk about. Let's shift gears, go over to wide receiver. You know, This wide receiver class was not that highly regarded. No real like freak athletes, guys. You know, a Julio Jones type where it's a franchise changer. First guy to go was DJ Moore to the Panthers. Actually, he was probably the best all around athlete. Maybe a bit raw, you know, transitioning to receiver is always difficult. But I like the spot he landed in with the Panthers. They obviously have a need. They've got a lot of names at receiver, but no standouts. So that, you know, he can win a job. The The offense is going to be interesting to see what happens there. They've brought in Norm. North Turner. And
North Turner.
Yeah, you know, his offense is a vertical offense. So, a guy who's got, quickness, decent hands, and is an athletic receiver, he could thrive in that. We'll see. Cam Newton obviously has the arm for that kind of offense. Does he have the quarterback IQ to pull it off? That's where we're going to have to keep an eye out. But DJ Moore could be one of the first receivers to have fantasy relevance.
Yeah, see, I disagree because, with Carolina, there's so many dynamic playmakers, and mm-hmm. we saw what Christian McCaffrey did last year as a pass catcher along with being a running back. With Carolina, they have Greg Olsen, they have McCaffrey, who they have to feed. They have Devin Funchess, who has established himself as their number one receiver. And we know with Cam Newton, he's going to run. He's going mm-hmm. to scramble. He's going to make plays by himself. So that, I think, DJ Moore is behind those four guys in the pecking order as far as getting targets, getting touches on that offense. And they took Curtis Samuel early last year, I believe in the second or third round. So they probably have high hopes for him coming off an injury. And, with McCaffrey probably transitioning more to a running back role, that might help him out, especially with the loss of Jonathan Stewart. And one thing with Carolina that I was surprised they didn't do is they didn't actually draft a running back this year. So that fully solidifies, an extra 680 yards and six touchdowns from Jonathan Stewart last year is probably going to go towards Christian McCaffrey's value. So, but moving back to DJ Moore, I don't see him producing, especially in this class of rookie receivers. I don't see him being in the top five of producers.
Yeah, I don't love Moore either. I think he's raw. I would have liked to see him average more than 12.9 yards catch last year. I mean, I know he's still making the transition. I know it's Maryland. It's not Cam Newton throwing him the ball. But Newton's also a little inconsistent. They have some weapons around. They brought in Torrey Smith. So I would imagine they're going to look more to Smith, at least initially downfield. Newton's sometimes erratic in the passing game. I'm just not getting that excited about it.
Yeah, those are all good points. Obviously, McCaffrey, he functioned last year as a receiver out of the backfield and had a huge target share. Cam Newton calls his own number every year. They say the same thing. They don't want him to run as much. They don't want him taking the hits. And when the bullets start to fly, he's out there scoring touchdowns. From the two. That's definitely a concern. I guess for me, it's when it comes down to receivers, though. Like Funch has made strides, but I'm just not sure he's that good. Torrey Smith. He's got something left in the tank, but he's not a great receiver. All the other guys on that roster, they've got ability, but haven't put anything together. So he's going to be a controversial guy until he puts stats on the sheet and see if he can produce. All right, then the next guy taken, you got Calvin Ridley going to the Falcons, which kind of surprised some people. The Falcons obviously have Julio Jones, and then Mohamed Sanu had a really great season, scored a lot of touchdowns out of their slot role. So receiver wasn't high on people's list of needs for the Falcons, but I kind of like it there as a guy who can take a little bit of attention away from those two guys. You guys have any feeling on Ridley?
Yeah, no, I agree. I think he's going to I think from a fantasy perspective, he's going to kind of end up similar to where Sanu is in terms of protection. I think mm-hmm. he is going to take some off of Julio on the other side. But again, you have Julio on the other side. You have Sanu working the slot. I think he's going to find himself open, but I think they're also just going to spread it around a little bit because then you have all the running backs to feed. Ridley might end up being a better real-life rookie than fantasy rookie, at least for this year.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely can see that.
Yeah, that could be a possibility. Yeah, but I think one of the things with Atlanta, they had a productive offense, like we said, last year, and this might have been just a testament of, okay, let's take the best play, best player available, and Calvin Ridley was definitely that. I think this is right up there with Chubb as being one of the steals of the draft for me. You know, anytime you can compare or you compare a wide receiver, especially with a first round caliber, with Julio Jones, that person automatically gets better. I think one of the knocks on Ridley coming into the draft season was that he's a little old. I think Brandon Cooks and Amari Cooper are younger than him, but that, you know, in Alabama, he didn't have all the attributes that you wanted coming out of a first round receiver, but their offense isn't really suited for that. And we've seen that, you know, from Amari Cooper coming out of Alabama, from Julio Jones coming out of Alabama as well. You know, sometimes they're just underused in Alabama, but you know, I agree with Ray. I think he might be a better real life fantasy wide receiver, but it only boosts up, you know, Julio Jones even that much more. I think it ticks down most anew just because he had that target share last year and now he probably won't. But, you know, with Atlanta's offense is so prolific that, you know, it just got better, and that's very scary.
Yeah, people have put his age as a negative thing. I don't fully get that. You know, I kind of see where they're saying, like, if he was good enough, he'd have been here by now, but he's going to have a higher maturity level because of that. He's probably the most polished route runner to come out of college this year. So, you know, that's one of the hardest things to transition is how to run routes at the NFL level. It's a completely different level of competition. You know, those are, I think, positives in my book for Ridley. He's got limited upside with the other two mouths getting fed over there. Next guy to go, Courtland Sutton to the Broncos. And I'm going to lump in while we're talking Broncos, and you know, you can sit this one out, Colin, is Deshaun Hamilton. you know, interesting draft for the Broncos because they've got one of the better wide receiver duos in the league already. I know they're both getting up there in age. They've had some injury issues. I think with Hamilton, it was a matter of they didn't expect him to be there in the fourth round. Hamilton is an excellent route runner, not the best athlete, but you know, a guy that can be a difference maker. Earlier in his career than a lot of guys, I think because of that same thing we talked about with Ridley just a minute ago. But you know, Demaryius Thomas, Emmanuel Sanders cemented in their roles. I know last year people had floated Emmanuel Sanders was getting shopped. You know, I never understood that. I thought he was such a good fit there. So it wouldn't shock me if that happened. And maybe one of these rookies then has an open door to a little more playing time. You also have Carlos Henderson there, in a slot role. He had a kind of an injury riddled first season, but, he's a beast, I think, from a athleticism standpoint, a build standpoint. Like, he's built like a running back who plays in the slot. So I don't know if either of these guys are going to be able to really crack the starting roster without an injury.
Yeah, I mean, maybe if Sanders is injured, Hamilton steps up a little bit. But I think Sutton's obviously the better receiver of the two, and you can make the argument that he's the best receiver in the draft, that I can see him potentially being the best fantasy wide receiver in the draft for 2018. But as you said, there's too many mouths to feed there with Thomas, with Sanders, with drafting Hamilton, with Carlos Henderson. The quarterback situation's a little unsettled also. But I can see it more from just a big play perspective. He averaged 16 yards catch last year, 12 touchdowns. He's a little bit of a bigger guy, which I like also as far as maybe jump balls in the red zone.
Yep.
So I think it could happen. I mean, I'm not really enthused with any of these guys, but if there's one I'm going to look at or watch maybe a little closer in the preseason, it's going to be Sutton.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. Obviously his size can translate to touchdowns. You know, his athleticism from like a speed standpoint has been questioned a little bit. People were really surprised that Dallas didn't grab him or trade up to get him. You know, he kind of seemed like a natural replacement for Dez down there, but you know, I guess there were some question marks and they just didn't have the grade on him to take him in the first.
Yeah, and I won't completely dismiss the Broncos draft as much as I want to. I do agree that Demaryius Thomas is getting up there in age, and Emmanuel Sanders, both of them actually spent a couple of games just dinged up and either ruled out or, you know, just not really performing, used as a decoy. So that's probably one of the things that they saw coming into the draft, is they needed to increase their depth coming into this year, because they tried to a couple of years ago by drafting Cody Latimer in the second round. He didn't pan out. He's basically a special teams player now. So, you know, their depth at wide receiver is, you know, it was nothing before the draft. So, and then if Sanders gets traded, like you said, or if Demaryius Thomas is unhappy and requests a trade, or, you know, if either of them get hurt, this helps them out. So I hope they both suck this year, because I think the Raiders are going to win the Super Bowl. But moving forward, I do think they're pretty good prospects.
They're for me, more interest if you're in a dynasty going into the 2019-2020 seasons. They're looking at as replacements for those two guys. And the other thing with the Broncos is they've got some instability on the offensive side, both with their offensive line, which, you know, they had ups and downs last year, but more downs in my opinion. And then, you know, quarterback, they brought in Case Keenum, and everybody thinks, you know, he's going to be a perfect solution. But I think part of it was he was in such a good fit in Minnesota, with a good offensive coordinator and good talent around him. You know, there's talent around him here. We'll see about the offensive coordinator and the system. You know, the Broncos were a bit of a mess the last two seasons, due to some of the quarterback play as well. But, you know, it's not a shoo-in that this offense.
Yeah. And that's one of the things. That's one of the things I'm most surprised about, right, is John Elway isn't really a good evaluator of quarterback talent. So, you know, and with Case Keenum, he's had 1 year. So there is a possibility that, you know, he comes out and he shows us who he was prior to last year, and then they're back in the cellar of the AFC West.
A couple more names here at receiver. Christian Kirk probably figures to be a slot guy going to the Cardinals. You know, obviously Larry Fitzgerald has got that role on lockdown, but he's probably coming into his final season. If he gets injured, Kirk could step up. That offense has a ton of question marks, though. James Washington is a guy that there's a lot of draft Twitter was really high on James Washington coming out of Oklahoma State. He goes to the Steelers at the end of the second round. That's interesting for me, because the Steelers have shown, you know, they're not afraid to put some responsibility on a rookie's shoulders if he shows he can handle it with, you know, Juju Schuster-Smith this past season. And they cleared out a bit of a role for him with Martavius Bryant getting traded to your Raiders there, Colin. Yeah, that's, I mean, you know,
yeah,
you don't
go
get that guy, not to use him. Hopefully so, the attitude gels with Gruden.
Yeah, that'll be something I'll talk about on a lot of football podcasts this year, how great our wide receiver core is. But, you know, with these two guys that you mentioned, these are actually two of the guys that I pegged as sleepers. I think Christian Kirk has the opportunity in front of him to be their starting receiver, because right now, if you look at their depth chart, I mean, it's Larry Fitzgerald above everybody, but their second receiver is, you know, Bryce Butler, who's shown flashes, but he's getting up there in age. J.J. Nelson, who can't stay on the field, and he's probably 150 pounds soaking wet. So he could find himself, you know, kind of being pushed into that role as an outside receiver, kind of out of his comfort zone. But I think that, you know, he fell a little bit far in my opinion. I think he probably should have been right up there, right in front of Sutton. So he's one of the guys that I'm looking, if I want to find, you know, that dart throw at the end of the draft, who I think is going to provide somewhat like Kareem Hunt did this year. He's someone that I'm targeting. And James Washington, he's a freak. I mean, he's 215 pounds. He's 5'11", so he's a little bit, you know, on the shorter side. But like you said, he has the opportunity in front of him because they have Juju, they have Antonio Brown. I know he'll probably be pretty far down the pecking order, and they haven't shown that they can, you know, they can keep three wide receivers happy and in all the roles and, you know, give them enough targets. But he's a guy that I just think he could be, you know, a star coming up pretty soon.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you on Washington. He's coming out of a big BCS Power Five conference, so I think that helps a little bit in terms of competition. And obviously, Roethlisberger and offenses are going to focus on Brown, focus on Bell. So it's a good thing in terms of coverage, but then it's a bad thing.
Juju Schuster-Smith probably is in the slot again. Antonio Brown doing his thing on the outside. Their QB coach, Randy, I forget his name, but he's replacing Todd Haley as offensive coordinator. So you think things will probably be pretty consistent. Somebody who can definitely win a job. Another guy people have a little bit of excitement about, Michael Gallup going to the Cowboys, obviously because they cleared Dez out. There's a lot of touches to get distributed on the Cowboys. Gallup, he's not the biggest guy, but he's got decent size for a receiver. Solid athlete. It's my issue with him is that there's just so much uncertainty with who's going to be in what role in Dallas. If you're drafting early at all, I think you need to be careful with Gallup.
Yeah, he's one of the guys I think is going to get overdrafted, and he's probably a guy that I'm going to stay away from. Just because, you know, people just have the perception of there's no one there. This guy got drafted kind of high, so he's just going to ease right into the role, you know, that Dez left, or, you know, there's so many targets to go around. But, you know, a lot of the veterans on their team, like Cole Beasley, they signed Alan Hearns. They also have Terrence Williams still there. So there is a little bit of uphill climb for Gallup to go. So he's not someone that I'm galloping to get, if you get my drift.
Wow, look at that.
Yeah, I agree there, Colin.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that's going to be a situation where he could get overdrafted. I mean, and I think there's enough solid to mediocre guys there. Like, they brought in Alan Hearns, that I think he might get lost in the shuffle too, unless he really does something to set himself apart. And I'm not sure he has it in him, at least beginning of the season.
Yeah, one of the next guys that I like. Sorry, Mike, to cut you off, but the guys that I like, in this third round that went is Tre'Quan Smith, a guy out of UCF that all he did was produce while he was there. And he's going to New Orleans. And, you know, anytime New Orleans drafts a wide receiver, Michael Thomas is a testament. Marquise Colston going way back. But they got rid of Willie Snead, so there's definitely an opening there. And this is a guy that, you know, he's tall, he's athletic. And anytime you have Drew Brees throwing you the ball and you only have Ted Ginn in front of you, with Cameron Meredith coming off an injury, you know, I'm probably targeting him more than I am, some of the higher guys that were drafted ahead of him.
And Sean Payton has showed in the past, if a rookie can grasp the playbook, he has no problem inserting him into the offense.
Yeah, he's definitely a name to at least keep on your radar.
And then a guy that surprised some people getting drafted early in the second there was Dante Pettis going to the Niners. There's definitely room at receiver with the 49ers. They got Pierre Garçon coming back from a neck injury. I'm not a Garçon fan at all, but, you know, he fits Kyle Shanahan's X role pretty well as a guy who just catches a ton of balls. They've got Marquise Goodwin, who was a feel-good story last year. I'm a big fan of Goodwin. He's just inconsistent. He's undersized, got great speed, but, you know, not a guy I think who's ever going to be a marquee player. And then Trent Taylor is, you know, a guy they drafted last year and was somewhat effective out of the slot. That's really his only role. But, you know, they went after Pettis, and when Kyle Shanahan likes a guy and goes out of his way to get him, I think you have to take note of that.
Yeah, I agree completely with Pettis. You know, I was a little surprised that he went ahead of Kirk. But, you know, this really makes me like the prospect of this San Francisco 49ers offense coming into this year. Their first-round pick, McGlinchey, you know, an offensive tackle that's going to protect most likely Jimmy G's blindside for the years to come. So that just, you know, upticks Jimmy G's value to probably the number one overall pick just based on he's a 4-0 as a starter. You know, he's got all these young guys around him. I do believe in Marquise Goodwin. Fun fact, actually played against him in high school. He's fast. Yeah. If you didn't know, he's fast. So, but yeah, I mean, he's a track star. He did have a feel good story last year, and he did show he might be able to thrive in that second wide receiver role. And Pierre Garçon's been injured. So Dante Pettis is someone that I'm actually looking out to get as well.
Yeah, Pettis is a weapon, and also in leagues that count return yardage, he's somebody to keep an eye on.
Good point. A nice point, Colin, on them bringing in McGlinchey at tackle. You know, he's probably their future left tackle. They still have Staley. He slots in at right tackle, which I really like when teams do that. Let a guy get up to speed for the NFL on the right side, groom him for the left side. You know, Shanahan is pretty much doing the same thing he did with Atlanta with the offensive line there. It took him about two seasons in Atlanta to get the offensive line where he wanted it. And once he got there, that offense really started clicking. You know, obviously their running game was, you know, tremendously explosive. So I think bringing him in, they brought in Weston Richburg at center. They've got some good guards, you know, that rounded out last year to form. So keep an eye out for the Niners. There's definitely a chance at some solid offensive production there.
One of the things I was surprised about for the 49ers draft as well was them not taking a running back to compete with Jerick McKinnon. So, you know, coming into draft season, kind of going off of the rookie talk that we're talking about, he's someone that might solidify his role as an RB1. I know there's Breida there, but, mm-hmm. you know, they signed him to a pretty big contract in the offseason, and he might be someone that goes in the fourth or fifth round and gets a lot of work with pass catching and running as well.
Yeah, McKinnon, you know, he's a spark score darling, obviously a supremely talented athlete. He's never been given a true opportunity, even with all the injuries the Vikings had the last couple of years at running back. He's always just been given
his role.
Yeah, you know, and it's never been the lion's share. It's always kind of been like third down back, change of pace. He hasn't been given a chance to get rolling. And the Niners sound like they're going to do that. You know, you mentioned Breida. I don't think he's got the body type to be a dominant running back. I like his talent, but you know, kind of undersized. Joe Williams, who they drafted a little bit high last year, you know, who knows if he's going to rebound and make any kind of dent into the roster. So, yeah, McKinnon is definitely somebody that I think he's going to have. It's going to be split on him. People are either going to be, you know, fully on board with McKinnon, or they're going to kind of say, you know, I'm not interested at all. So, you know, if you can take a guess, you know your draft room and who you're sandwiching picks between, that might help whether you need to draft them in the fourth or the fifth. All right. Then just looking down the list here, see if there's any other notables. You got Equanimeous St. Brown going to the Packers. Really late, round six. He was a guy people thought would probably be going ahead of that. You know, the Packers took a ton of receivers. So, you know, he's obviously got some competition there. There's starters in place. But, you know, if you get on the field with Aaron Rodgers, good things can happen.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah, they have a role to fill as well for Jordy.
Yeah.
And he has the talent to do it. It's just really finding the consistency and the fact that they drafted more than one receiver.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah, they're hoping that one of them hits.
Right. Yeah, he's got the big body, so, you know, that kind of drew people's attention. But, you know, they took Jamon Moore well ahead of him. They also took Marquez Valdez-Scantling, who had a little bit of buzz leading up into the draft. So that's a situation to monitor as the preseason goes, and even, you know, see if you can read anything in the tea leaves with guys getting into games, see if anybody's a special teamer. That'll mean, you know, that they're going to make the active roster on game days. You know, that kind of thing. You got to keep an eye out and see, and don't just say, I think this guy's a big receiver and it obviously can score touchdowns. Like, there has to be a role for sure. Was there anybody you guys wanted to mention at receiver?
I think we kind of hit on all the big ones. I mean, again, I generally don't look at rookie fantasy receivers, just because to learn the playbook, I just find it to be a little more difficult for them. And there's a consistency factor as well, that I rather just grab a bunch of rookie running backs, throw them against the wall and see which one or two stick, than trying to overdraft or potentially try to figure out which rookie receiver it is. Cause, I mean, Ridley, DJ Moore, first round, I'm not really that excited about, so I'll probably sit out rookie running backs, rookie receivers.
Right. Yeah. All right. So then there's a few tight ends to mention. Yeah, I said earlier on how difficult it is to have an impact as a rookie tight end. You know, even you know, OJ Howard, who was such a complete athlete down in Tampa Bay, you know, he scored some touchdowns, but even a guy like him couldn't have a big impact. So, you know, definitely limit your expectations. But the three notable ones for me, Hayden Hurst, Mike Gesicki, and Dallas Goedert. You know, the Ravens kind of surprised a lot of people taking Hayden Hurst 25th overall. They kind of thought that's where they should have drafted Lamar Jackson, and then looked for the best of those three tight ends later on in the second, or even, you know, just waited to see who was left. They weren't going to get him at 52 where their second round pick was, but, you know, they got their guy. Like you said, Colin, they've always had a fondness for tight ends. And if you can show you're able to handle NFL competition, they're not afraid to put a rookie tight end out there.
Yeah, with Hayden Hurst, you know, I think they were trying to find their Dennis Pitta comparison, someone that can just catch the ball out of either like a slot type position or an inline tight end. And that's probably where he fits the most, is kind of as the slot guy in their offense. And, you know, we've seen in the past with Joe Flacco, as long as he has that reliable guy that he can turn to whenever he's getting pressured, or, you know, he's going through his reads and not seeing anybody, he'll just dump it down to someone like that. And he has some athleticism as well. So he's a guy that might actually be worth a late draft pick, you know, in a tight end, or as a tight end.
Yeah, you want to see how much he plays with, you know, like the first unit in the preseason, where he's practicing, that kind of thing, make sure before going overboard. But as a, you know, a guy in a deeper league, or there's a handful of two tight end leagues out there these days. You know, he's somebody to think about.
Gross.
and then you got Mike Gesicki going to the Dolphins. Gesicki's more of just a receiver. He doesn't really offer much in the way of blocking. But Adam Gase, you know, he made Julius Thomas into a star, and Julius Thomas can't block for crap. So Gesicki, he's got a possibility to come in day one and have an impact. You know, great speed for tight end, although there's, you know, some talk about he runs a great 40 time because he's tall. He's got a long stride. He's not going to be able to do that. You know, on a football field, you rarely ever run in a straight line, but still definitely a quick tight end. Great hands, good route running. The Dolphins offense might be what limits his upside more than anything, though.
Yeah, I mean, I think without Landry there, they might be looking a little bit for the possession guy. I know they signed Amendola, but he can't really stay healthy either. So I think it could be an opportunity for him to suck up those intermediate middle-of-the-field targets, maybe be a red zone option as well.
Right, right. And then Dallas Goedert goes to the Eagles. You know, obviously Zach Ertz there. He's at no risk of losing his job, but Doug Peterson is definitely a guy who will utilize multiple tight ends. He's an Andy Reid disciple. Andy Reid has done that for years, and you know, even these days he uses three tight ends in formations, and all of them will catch the ball. So you know, Peterson's kind of in that same mold. And you know, I don't, obviously the yardage isn't going to be there from a fantasy impact side, but I could easily see Goedert getting a handful of looks in the end zone in some of their different tight end packages, where you saw last year with the Eagles, Trey Burton was that guy, you know, who was just a good athlete and could get open in the red zone. So maybe in a best ball format, Goedert could have some appeal.
Yeah, and I think, you know, they lost Brent Celek, they lost Burton, like you said, so they need, that was actually a need position for them to get that second tight end. But on a non-fantasy side of it, I thought them drafting him was awesome because this was after the Jason Witten news came out and Cowboys had the next pick. So they draft or they trade up and they take him the pick before the Cowboys, and then they go to the player profile and they're like, this guy loves the Dallas Cowboys. He was named after the Dallas Cowboys. I was like, oh, that's so awesome. I loved it.
Yeah, Philly kind of owned Dallas this draft, you know, between that and then David Akers coming out and kind of playing the WWE heel role and getting into it with the crowd there. It was in good fun, but man, he lit that city on fire.
I love it every time.
Yeah, so there's not too many people out there feeling bad for the Cowboys though. All right, then a couple last things to cover draft-wise. Colin, you had a couple of spots you wanted to talk about where there's some veterans who maybe are coming into a better situation for this year because of what got drafted around them. You want to hit us with that?
Yeah, so we've touched on a few of them. You know, Joe Flacco, I think they're going all in with drafting those tight ends for him, with getting that offensive tackle in the second round. So if this was ever the year to draft him as your QB2, this might be the time. The next one is, it's got to be Jimmy Garoppolo. I mean, with the guys that they're surrounding him with, you know, he might borderline a top five drafted quarterback if someone believes in him that much coming into the season. And then I'll be a little bit of a homer and I'll go with Derek Carr as one of them as well. Just because, you know, they solidified the tackle spot, which was definitely a need coming into the draft. Now, if we want to go in depth on the Raiders draft, then that might take another hour. So I'll just kind of leave it at that. But then, you know, giving up a third round pick to get Martavis Bryant, it's a low risk move, and it could pay out, you know, big with having Jordy Nelson, Amari Cooper in the slot, you know, one of them alternating in the slot, and then Martavis Bryant on the outside. So, you know, those three quarterbacks, I think, benefited a lot. We talked about Christian McCaffrey getting some more running back yardage, and then Jerick McKinnon as well.
Those are definitely spots that you know, people might be overlooking. Just, you know, like you said, in a 2QB league, a guy like Flacco could have some value. You know, the Raiders – do, you know, they had a solid offseason. They got to sort it all out, but that's what the preseason's for. I think Derek Carr makes a really nice buy low. The year he had, you know, people had high expectations coming in, and then the year he had, obviously with injury and some ineffective play, you know, people are going to be gun shy. So if you're in a 2QB league, or if you're a wait on quarterback type like I am, he's not a bad guy to start the season with at all.
No, I don't think so. It's definitely some good value there.
Yeah. You mentioned a couple offensive linemen there. You know, obviously the Raiders addressed it. That was smart. You know, the Colts, they took Quentin Nelson at 6, which you don't really see a guard go that high very typically, but you know, that's the highest offensive lineman that they had on their board. They knew it was a need. So they took him. Yeah, anything they can do to improve a disastrous offensive line is a step in the right direction.
Yeah, and then they got a guard in the second round that they traded up to get as well. So, you know, everyone knew that that was one of the downfalls, and everyone knows that if Andrew Luck is going to perform, he just needs to stay on the field. So this is something for the Colts that was great for them.
Yeah, you mentioned – we already mentioned Niners.
Yeah, it took them long enough.
new GM obviously realized that he needed to address the position pretty badly, but wasn't left with much in the cupboard.
Yeah, what a concept.
mentioned Mike McGlinchey going to the Niners, a good spot there. A couple of centers going in the first round. The Lions kind of sniped the Bengals there, picking right ahead of them. They took Frank Ragnow, the best center in the draft, when the Bengals had been pretty high on him, and it was a big position in need for them. He makes the Detroit offense a little more appealing in my eyes. You know, they spent a good part of their year without Taylor Decker at tackle. You know, him having a full year, a full preseason. I think they're still going to have TJ Lang at guard there. He's a great run blocker.
And like you said, Mike, I think that they did snipe him, and I think, you know, we talk about it a lot in our baseball podcast, but the Bengals might have done a panic pick. Yeah. They might have panicked, and they just said, look, we know we need this position. I know this guy is way far down on our draft board, but we have to address it.
Yeah, he's the next best center, and that's it. I can see that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, it doesn't seem like, you know, we're talking Billy Price, who they took out of Ohio State. Doesn't seem like that was probably where people had him graded, but they addressed a need. And part of his lower grade could be that he was coming off of, a pec injury. So that always confuses me when people downgrade players in the draft because of, you know, non-career threatening injuries. Just they haven't seen them at the Senior Bowl, at the combine, and, you know, workout days, that kind of stuff. You got tape on the guy. You can talk to his coaches. You can find out who he is. A pec injury, you're gonna give him a downgrade. Like, that just doesn't make sense. But
I mean, that's just the weight that I think people put on the combine too, whether it's right or wrong.
Yeah. Any other offensive linemen you guys think are gonna make an impact this year?
I mean, I think Hernandez with the Giants, I think it'll definitely help the interior of that line with Barkley, Beckham, and all those Manning and all those guys.
Mm-hmm. You know, the Patriots took Isaiah Wynn out of Georgia to pair with Sonny Michel, get a guy that he's used to blocking for him. So that was interesting that they went there. People had them going different places, but it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, that's kind of surprising. It was surprising that they didn't take a quarterback, I think, of all.
Yeah, I mean, I had them pegged the draft.
You know, they took one real late, but it wasn't.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say they took one real late, but they didn't take one, you know, where we all thought that they should have. You know, they need to get that heir apparent, but they didn't seem to think so.
Or Brady might not be letting them.
I mean, he plans to play until he's 45, so, you know. I had him pegged for taking Lamar Jackson at 31. Belichick had said some things about him in the run up to the draft, and it just seemed like, you know, that was he was going to take the guy that people thought wasn't an NFL quarterback and show him, you know, I'll win with this guy, and I'll make him a Pro Bowl quarterback.
Yeah, I think that's where a lot of people had them going, so it was a little surprising to see them zag while everyone thought they would zig.
Yeah, never try to figure out what Bill Belichick is thinking. That's a losing proposition.
Nope.
We all learned again.
And then to wrap up, you know, defense is a part of a lot of fantasy leagues. DFS, you got to have a defense out there. You mentioned Bradley Chubb already going to the Broncos. That pass rush is going to be something, man. I do not envy the teams in the division having to scheme for two really good pass rushers.
It's not something I'm looking forward to, but at least we solidified a couple tackle spots, and we already know our interior of our line is one of the best in the NFL. So, you know, I think whenever the Broncos took Chubb, it was best player available. They didn't think that he would get there. I'm not sure why Cleveland didn't yeah. take him and pair him with Myles Garrett. That was a little iffy to me. I really wish they would have to keep him out of my division, but I think it was a great football move for the Broncos to just kind of say, look, this guy is probably the number one player in this draft behind Barkley or even in front of him, and we need to get him to pair him with Von Miller. Yep.
A good amount of cornerbacks taken in the first round as usual. It's obviously a really important position in the NFL these days. The Browns went Denzel Ward out of Ohio State. Surprised a good amount of people. You know, same kind of thing was said there. Why don't you trade back if that's what you're going to do? But again, with two quarterbacks still on the board, people were waiting to say, you know, I don't think we need to pay that price. We can wait. But you know, they got their guy, and if he pans out to be a solid corner, it doesn't hurt paying that price. Bears took Rokon. What's that called? Yeah, well,
it didn't work out the last time they took a quarterback and a cornerback in the first round, though. So there is that
stuff that hasn't worked out in Cleveland over the years. The Bears took Rokon Smith, probably the best linebacker in the draft. Really, sideline to sideline linebacker, gets after it. Good fit for the Bears that he's their kind of linebacker. You know, he should step in from day one. That defense could be half decent, depending on, you know, how they gel with new coaching.
Yeah, they were pretty good at home last year, and that was probably the one pick that just put a stake in my heart, because I love Rokon Smith. I was saying it ever since the BCS National Championship game that I wanted him on my team. So to see him go two picks ahead of me was a stake in my coffin.
Yeah, I think as far as IDP goes, he probably has the most value of any of the defenders.
Yeah,
as a rookie. Sure.
I'm a notable guy here. You got Vita Vea, a guy that Draft Twitter absolutely loved. He's a stud, man. He's not a fun guy to block. The Bucks take him, and he fills a role with Chris Baker departing. You know, that's a good spot. I like him there. Playing on a pretty solid defensive line.
Yeah, and then to keep the defensive line thing going, I think one of the biggest surprises for all of us watching was what New Orleans did. I mean, they traded so much draft capital to jump up to number 14, where everyone's like, okay, this is where Lamar Jackson's going, and then they take a defensive end out of UT San Antonio. So that was a little surprising, but he is a guy that he is a position of need for them. They needed someone to get after the quarterback.
Yeah, so something must have just spooked them there, like the Bills or Chargers or something that they just said, you know what, we don't think this guy's going to last much longer. Let's go grab him. Well, you know, it remains to be seen, but that defense is getting better. Went from the worst defense in the league 2 years ago to a pretty solid last season. Couple other defensive linemen, De'Aaron Payne out of Alabama, joining back up with running mate Jonathan Thomas in Washington. That's a good duo for the Redskins there. They'll be giving my Eagles trouble every year for a long time. He's obviously a good run stopper. Packers addressed the need, getting Jair Alexander at corner out of Louisville. Great athlete. Some people had a better grade on him than others. You know, we'll kind of have to see what pans out there. A couple safeties to mention. Minka Fitzpatrick out of Alabama going to the Dolphins. That's a nice fit. The Dolphins need all the talent they can get on defense. Derwin James from Florida State going to the Chargers. A lot of people excited for that one. He makes that secondary really complete. it's going to be a tough time passing on the Chargers this year.
Yeah, he was one of the guys I was hoping we would take at 15 after we traded back. So, you know, that was a little heartbreaking to see him go to a division rival as well. So, you know, that tied into the tough draft for the Raiders.
Yep. Any other defenders you guys want to point out?
I think we kind of hit through at least the ones that I have my eye on as far as making an immediate impact or from a DFS IDP standpoint.
Let's go around and just, you know, say who your favorite draft was and you know, who you think is going to have the biggest 2018 improvement because of it. Yeah. You got anybody on the tip of your tongue, Colin?
I mean, there were a lot of people that a lot of teams that improved their roster completely. I think with the Colts, you know, that's one of the ones that stands out a lot, and we've talked about it a lot on this podcast. You know, they solidified the interior of their line. That was a problem. They took, you know, an outside linebacker in the second round. They took two defensive ends in the second round. So whenever you have a first round pick at the top and then four second round picks, you're going to get a lot of infusion of young and good talent. So, and then towards the end of the draft where we talked about Nyheim Hines as running back to pair with Marlon Mack. So that, as long as Andrew Luck stays healthy, you know, that's just the big if he stays healthy, that's a team that, you know, that was picking, I think they had originally the number two or three overall pick, where you can see them being in the 20s as long as everything pans out right.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think the Giants, but I mean, that's kind of obvious because they got Barkley, they got the lineman in the second round, then they got Lorenzo Carter, who has some speed coming around the edge in the third round. But Tampa Bay's another one between Vita Bay and then Ronald Jones, then the third, and then they took MJ Stewart later in the second round, Carlton Davis later in the second round. I mean, obviously, having the three second round picks clearly helped, but then they get two cornerbacks in the second, they get a safety in the fourth, they got Jones, who might be one of the better running backs in this draft, plus you get a stud on the D-line. I think they helped their cause a lot draft.
Yeah, and for me, you know, my Eagles didn't quite have enough picks to have a difference-making draft, but I liked what they did. I like what your Raiders did, Colin. I think there's some good pieces they added, both in the draft and adding parts with draft picks. For me, I think the Lions had a really nice draft. I'm really interested to see, you know, if that running game can finally get going. You know, they improved their offensive line. You know, it'll be interesting to see what Matt Patricia does as a head coach. You know, he's gonna let Jim Bob Cooter do his thing on offense, which I think is a smart move. And they added a little defensive talent as well. So those are just a couple for me.
Yeah. You might be on an island, Mike, thinking that the Oakland Raiders had a good draft because, you know, we reached for a Sam Houston State defensive tackle in the second round. We got, you know, a North Carolina A&T offensive tackle who has all the tools, but he's just very toolsy. That's all he is. So one of the best picks I think we made of the day was Maurice Hurst in the fifth round, who fell because of complications in his heart. But, you know, he was a first-round talent everywhere. So that compared with to go along with Martavis Bryant as a third round trade, those were probably the two best moves. But as far as the middle rounds, I mean, it was hard to watch, to say the least.
I guess what I'm grading a lot there is Martavis Bryant for third rounder. That's a guy who's a difference making receiver for not much money. And anytime you improve your offensive line in the draft, I give you a strong grade. But that does it. Let's go around the wheel here. Give out everybody's Twitter handle. So, you know, come NFL season, we can be told how wrong we were on all of these shots. Go ahead, Colin.
You can find me at CWeatherwax13, and I'll take all the heat every time. You know, I miss on a lot of people, but, you know, I hit on a couple, and that's all that matters.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of fantasy analysis. You know, you're giving takes because they need to be given, and there's no one has a crystal ball.
I'm on Twitter at Ray_Hune_28.
And then I'm Roto underscore Wan, W-A-N. So give us a follow and stay tuned for more NFL coverage over at FWFB as the season gets closer. Thanks for being on with me today, guys.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, take care, and we'll chat more as NFL season approaches.
Bring your A game and start playing, cause every single week another win for me.
Yo, Commissioner, you can just pay me now. City win first place, then take a bow. Finish on top, I'ma set the standard. Don't believe me, you could check the standings. When I draft, I make smart selections. Got more sleepers than a narcoleptic. Meet your match, kid, my lineup's nasty. It's far-fetched, thinking you might catch me. No surprise, I'm taking home the prize. Only time I rest is a playoff bye. Make amazing finds off the waiver wire. All day and night, better stay retired. See me in first, all proud and cozy. Bro, please, I can't even count my trophies. Bragging, even with my bats are slumping, I'ma pack a punch, that tracker junkie.
I'm the one that I wanna play, first place in my league. Got a blockbuster on my way, and a pickup on my sleeve. They call my team insane.